Campus FM presents the third talk in a series of lectures by Professor Freda Steuer, expert in terminology and technical translation. The lecture was organized by the Department of Maltese at the University of Malta and is entitled Creation and Management of a Virtual Terminology Information Center.
Nil-qawkom għal din it-taħdita, l-aħħar taħdita fis-sensiela ta' tlieta mill-professoressa Steuer. Nassumu wkoll li ħadkun taħdita interessanti bħalma kienu tnejn l-oħra wkoll. Illum il-professoressa Steuer ħad titkellem fuq il-ħolqien u l-immaniġjar ta' ċentru virtwali għall-informazzjoni fuq it-terminoloġija.
In my third lecture, I would like to talk about the challenges in actual translation today, especially in technical translation, administrative texts, and so on, and how modern translators have to deal with all these challenges and what they can do to cope with the conceptual and terminological problems in technical translation. And as the second title tells you, it will mainly be a computer-assisted translation that is needed, but in a very interesting way, the translator can handle computers the way the translator wants it to be. So it's not a machine that takes over. The translator himself is in charge, and it is the machine that will be used whenever necessary. So let's first start with the actual situation in general. We are aware that the 21st century is a very complex century. We call it the information society. There is more information than we can ever read and manage. When I was studying at university, I had some professors who still could claim they had read everything there was to be read on a particular topic. That is impossible today. We can't even cope with the media of one day, with the information of one day. So there are billions and billions of pages produced, and many of these have to be translated. Think about all the technical specifications. Imagine you buy a video recorder or a DVD player in your home. Basically, the only thing you want this appliance to do is you put in your DVD or you put in your video, you press a button that says play, and that's it. Or you want to do record, that's it. But what you get when you buy such an appliance is a huge manual with 500 different functions. Appliances get extremely complicated, and translation has to be available. So this means a lot of technical specifications to be translated. It is complex, and it is supposed to be correct. If not, if mistakes have been made in these manuals, then companies very often face liability claims. We even have to teach our students these days, when they become translators and when they're in their master's class, how to insure themselves against such liability claims. It's not the first time that a young translator does his first job, earns a little bit of money, and afterwards gets a huge liability claim because there was, presumed or not, a mistake in the text. So lots of technical specifications, lots of procedures to be translated, lots of technical manuals in general, reports and legal and administrative documents. In Belgium, it's a multilingual market, and we have three important markets to translate for. That's our own internal market, because we are living in a country with three languages. We already have an internal market to translate for between Dutch, French, and German. There is secondly the international market. Companies who want to sell abroad, they have to translate their documents in many different languages towards the countries they're exporting into. And thirdly, there is the European Union, the European Institutes, and of course the largest translation service in the world is located in Brussels. So basically we have three markets, you could say, for translation. A survey was done as to what types of texts have to be translated. And I think the Belgian example could also give you an idea as to what the Maltese market could look like. First of all, 25% of all texts to be translated are legal documents and administrative documents. So this is a very broad category, of course, dealing with contracts, documents for companies, administration, and legal texts. Another 20 to 25% deals with scientific texts, especially in the biomedical field. Huge market for biomedical translations. Another 20% is more technical, and then especially in the field of computing, telecommunications. Then we have catalogs to be translated, marketing documents, sales documents, advertisements to be translated. And then another market is there for children's books, for multimedia products, subtitling of films, and other elements. So you can see the market is very diverse and very important. Again, Europe has been growing substantially over the last couple of years, and we moved from 4 to 9 to 11 and now to 20 languages. So that means we're dealing with 20 languages. It's an enormous amount of language pairs that have to be dealt with here. The world market leads us to an interesting challenge. On the one hand, we can say, yes, the world is becoming a global village. There is this internationalization, and very often there is a protest raised against it. Globalization is considered to be negative. It means you find the same shops everywhere. There is a kind of unification of culture. And finally, English is going to be our universal language, and that's it. We will lose our own identity. I don't believe so, because you can clearly see that due to internationalization, although English may be a common language in business communication, still the aspect of localization is growing incredibly. The more we globalize, at the same time, the more we have to stress the local markets and the importance of local markets. So the more globalization is growing and internationalization, the more translation will be needed for local markets. We may indeed have the same shops worldwide, but they need their tags, their product information, and everything else translated and adapted for each local market. Very large translation offices earn more than 60% of their turnover in localization projects. So that's more than just translating texts or catalogs. It means translating them for a local market, but adapting them at the same time, because sometimes specifications will be different. Safety regulations may be different in different countries. Particular procedures may be different. If you are, we did a translation once of Shimano. You know, Shimano is a bicycle, race bicycle, sports bicycles. Well, bicycles are not that popular here, I've noticed, but in our countries, cycling is very popular. Everyone has a bicycle, and it's also very big in sports. So if we have a Shimano, which is a Japanese brand for sports bicycles and mountain bikes, if you have all these spare parts that are delivered with the bikes, then they have to be translated, all the names for these parts, for all the local markets. But again, not every type of bike is sold in every country. So it has to be adapted to particular local needs. And these are very complex operations. In fact, we could conclude internationalization and globalization triggers localization, and this means a lot of multilingual communication, so a lot of translation to be done. So that's the positive aspect. At the same time, companies start realizing that their core business, well, let's say 100 years ago, the real wealth of a company was, for example, the gold or coal or other materials they owned. Nowadays, this is finished. Companies' core businesses is knowledge. Knowledge, but knowledge normally is in the head of the employees. Every company knows that if you have an excellent floor manager or an excellent senior executive, whatever, in a particular department, this man or woman is worth his value in gold. because the person has an enormous amount of knowledge. The moment a person leaves, the knowledge is gone. And there is no time to write everything down or to train someone else for the same job. So this is what we call implicit knowledge. It's the knowledge in the head of the employee. And companies start realizing that this knowledge is their biggest asset. So they will try to make this knowledge explicit. If you make the knowledge that's first implicit in the head of an employee, if you want to make it explicit, it means that you're going to store it in a database. You're going to make it reusable for other people in the company. You're going to share information. I'll give you one clear example to illustrate this. When I graduated from university, I first went to work in a company and I did a translation job before I went back to university to do my PhD. When I started work in the company, I got 6 months to do nothing. Just walk around, talk to people, receive training, try to understand how the company worked, read manuals, and I got an enormous amount of in-house training. For the first 6 months, I was not productive at all. The people at the time, but that's more than 25 years ago, I won't go into detail, at that time, I'm convinced that the rhythm of life was a bit easier. And 6 months of, let's say, kind of internship to get trained was no problem. Nowadays, this is impossible. A young person that's going to be employed in a company or a translator that has to do a job has to deliver immediately. You won't get the time for 6 months to start in-house training and to receive all the data quietly from one person to the other about terminology, about texts, and so on. No, you'll have to start and deliver immediately. So again, it's important that the knowledge in the company is made explicit so that a new young translator, for example, knows where to find information. Imagine you go and work for a bank. Well, how would you know about the products, the services, the particular terms used in that bank, because they differ from bank to bank? Well, this could be done by making it explicit in a database. Okay? And if we want to do that, companies gradually start to realize that terminology is a key issue to them in making the knowledge explicit. So if you want to have good communication in a company between different employees or between customers and the employees, so both on the internal level within the company but also in external communication, then you need a correct and good terminology. Research has been done also in our banking system. 60, 70 years ago, when our parents and grandparents opened a bank account, they decided to be true and faithful to their only bank manager they would ever know. They wouldn't dream of changing to another bank. They had a, let's say, more or less confidential and personal relation with their bank manager. There was no big deal about sales and advertisement about different banking products, so they stayed with one and the same bank. Some research was done into this field, and now it is seen that if a bank doesn't give clear information, or if it writes a letter to the customer with complex terminology and not making itself clear to the customer in the register the customer can understand, then there is a 90% chance that the bank will lose the customer. Because in our home, at least, we are confronted with new kinds of advertisements for other banks all the time. So this becomes dangerous, and they should rely on good internal and external communication. If you consider terminology as an essential tool in good communication, then the best thing to do is to develop a kind of central database where every employer can access the same information. Oh, how is this product named here? What's the correct term? What's the translation? And what is the content? What is the meaning here? A good definition of everything is important. And so instead of calling it a terminology database, we can call it a central knowledge repository. So basically, all the knowledge of that particular company is stored in this central database. We have to admit that translators are not in the most central position in a company. Very often, it's a small service that is attached sideways to the company, and managers don't think of translators as really very important. They consider their normal activities as being very important. So if then a translator goes to the central manager and says, well, we would like to build a terminology database because we think it's really useful for the company, not only for our own translation job, but for every employee, very often they will say, yes, but, you know, translation, it is already very expensive, and what are we going to do with such a terminology database? The moment you can sell the idea of a terminology database as being a central knowledge database used for every service in the company, that's a different story. Then very often they start listening to you and say, yes, it might be important to have this type of knowledge sharing. So again, translation is under a lot of pressure these days. And I'm sorry to say, but the only three terms that are valid here are it has to be better, it has to be faster, and it has to be cheaper. Translation is considered to be too expensive. Very often the product has already been developed. It's ready to be launched on the market. And oh yes, we've forgotten a small detail, translation of the manual. Could it be done by yesterday? And there we are. So it always has to be faster, 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 otherwise markets are lost. And it has to be better in the sense that mistakes are not allowed for, because nowadays it is very much so that liability claims will be filed if there is a problem with a particular manual. So companies and translation offices have to deliver the texts on time in different languages. I once met a translator who worked for Sony Ericsson, the portable phone company. She did a translation in Vienna, in Austria, for the German-speaking market. And she was at a conference on terminology. And she said, the only reason why I can be here and study a bit about procedures in translation is that we do have computer-assisted tools to help us. Because if a new phone has to be launched on the Austrian market, the manual has to be there immediately. So we're under an enormous time pressure to produce it, otherwise a market is lost. And very often, in some countries at least, translation is mandatory. It's obligatory to have the text translated before a product can be launched on the market. For example, in Canada, this is the case. In Belgium, it is obligatory, at least for some parts of society. So in many multilingual countries, it is essential to have translation. Now, again, if we look at the tools that are available, we should be aware of the fact that the computing environment is changing incredibly fast. I sometimes try to convince my children that when I was studying, I did not have a computer to write my thesis. It was still an old-fashioned typewriter. And then I learned to program on a mainframe computer with punched cards. And then they look at me as if I'm from prehistorical times. So I'm not. I'm not that young, but I'm not from prehistorical times. But you can see that the capacity of computers is growing incredibly fast. I will talk briefly about Moore's Law and explain you how it works. But before that, I simply want to say the hardware development is going so fast. The smallest computer like this one over here is more powerful than a mainframe 20 years ago. And this also enhances a software evolution, of course. Software can become more powerful the moment computers grow more powerful. And for translators, they definitely can benefit from the new technology. It's not getting more complicated. On the contrary, it's getting more user-friendly. And translators have to benefit to improve the quality of their work, so it can get better, because you can trace your mistakes, for example, in a systematic way. And the speed can be improved. It can get faster. So these are two important aspects. So if we look at the first portable computers, some of you may remember the first Commodores and Ataris and the first PCs without a hard disk. And the computer capacity grew that much. This is a slide dealing with Moore's law, and you can see that over the different time periods from 1970 on the left-hand side to 2005, and then up the vertical axis, you will find the number of transistors available on a microchip. You see that it is exponentially growing. What Moore's law says is the surface of a transistor is reduced to half its size in 12 months. In other words, capacity doubles each year. This slowed down a bit after a couple of years. Now it still doubles the capacity each 24 months. Each 2 years, computers get double as powerful. And this will continue for some time. But this also means that a very small chip, the microchip in a computer, is so powerful these days that it can be built into cars, into all kinds of devices we use in everyday life. Very soon, we'll probably have a microchip in our clothes. Not in our heads yet, but it might come later. But we will see that due to the advances in microchip technology, very complex data processing can be done in very small chips. And the most complex data processing is human language. Human language is more complex than the largest mathematical problem. No computer can capture human language right now, or can analyze it, or can translate it. But still, it will be possible for a microchip to contain speech data so that we can talk and communicate with particular appliances. For example, in cars, a lot of electronics has been built in over the last couple of years, and it is very feasible that you can talk to your GPS or your navigation system. You can simply talk by a speech-driven component. Also, other applications in telecommunication, in fashion, in domotics, that is the intelligent house of the future, where you can talk to your window and ask for the curtain to be closed and so on, or talk to your kitchen and so on. This is reality these days. So gradually more complex language applications are feasible. I'm not recommending it to everyone. I'm not recommending you to talk to your kitchen. You'd better talk to your family, but still, it's possible. Okay, now interesting applications also in speech data relate to assisting for the disabled. For example, tools for the blind, so that texts can be read to them, that they can use a lot of information, and that the text can be translated into speech and that it can be spoken to them. And a lot of other approaches to language issues become possible. It doesn't mean that the computer will take away the human value or the human capacity of language, but there is a particular type of communication that is possible. So again, if we look at the information society, then we can say there are large amounts of text to be translated. Every tool gets more complex, so we need more user manuals, more procedures to be translated. And there is another challenge. Translators don't only have to translate printed matter. Very often, the texts they produce will also be used on websites, on CD-ROMs. So either a translator needs to have the techniques to translate a website, or will have to produce texts that are compatible to be put on CD-ROM and on different other media. So we have to be more flexible about the information we are handling. A final challenge, and we'll see that in the slides I have made about the European Commission and their translation work, is version management and updating. Many of you have the same problem, I'm sure. You write text in the first version. It is distributed or discussed. You correct some items, and you send out a second copy. And after that, it has been handled by other people. Again, there is a third copy. And in the end, nobody is sure of which version is actually circulating. Translators very often have this problem as well. So version management is a very, very big problem in many companies. And also the way you update your information, which is the last version, the corrected one, the revised one, which terminology is accepted, yes or no? So this is a very important problem. Let's have a look first at the evolution in the European Union and how we are dealing with all these problems in the European Union. You are aware of the fact that the European Union has been growing very fast. We started with four languages. That was French, German, Dutch, and Italian. It then grew with Danish and English. Then the Greek language was added, then Spanish and Portuguese, and gradually it grew. The moment we had nine languages in 1986, nine languages already meant 72 language combinations we had to translate into, because nine languages means nine source languages multiplied with eight target languages, so that's 72. Then we moved on to 11 languages, and then finally the big step forward, 2004, which also affected your country, then all of a sudden we had 20 languages. Still, we try to keep up with the translation challenge, and the European Commission thinks it's very important to have this aspect of multilinguality and equal access to information for each citizen in his own national language. I can't stress enough that this is very important, especially for me being from the northern part of Belgium and always having felt that we had to do something against French, which was opposing us. Then you're proud of your own language and you want it to be there. You don't want to be set aside and just having to read French and English texts, for example. Your own national language is very important here. Now, this is all very nice, the European Union growing, but what does it mean in the translation load? And here on this slide, you can see what it means in pages to be translated. You see the situation in 2001, an estimation of 1,300,000 pages to be translated. It grew a little bit in 2003, but then the prognosis for 2005, in the meantime, it has been realized, but I still have the old data, it was already more than doubled. So that meant they were expecting a growth in the translation volume of 82%. But unfortunately, well, new translators were hired and they're continuing to search for good translators, but they can't always find the right language combinations. Translators, the volume of people working there has grown for 22%. You can immediately see the discrepancy, because the estimated growth for each translator will have to translate about 55% more in amount of pages. So this is the same slide, but then presented in a different way. So you can see the growth in the amount of pages per translator. Now, we can't do it all, and we can't continue to work weekend in, weekend out, day and night. Translation is a very intense job, and you get tired after a number of hours, so you can't continue like a machine, of course. So they had to do something about their workflow. First of all, they looked into pre-editing, translation itself, and post-editing. These are three aspects of translation. Pre-editing means you have to prepare your text before it has to be translated. Then there is the actual translation process, and then there is the post-editing part. What do we mean by pre-editing? First of all, there has to be a form of source text control. Source texts contain an enormous amount of mistakes. You may be surprised by this, but it is the truth. It is like that in business companies. It's always like that in European institutions. Part of the problem is that the documents are highly technical and very complex, and very often the document has not been written by somebody who is a native speaker of the language. You get heads of units, director generals from all the member states. These people are not less or more intelligent. They're all extremely well-qualified people, but they don't speak the language as their mother tongue. So very often they have to produce texts in English or French to start from, and you get plenty of mistakes and inconsistencies. So source text control is very important. And we also train our students in translation to be aware of the problem. You shouldn't take a text for granted. And you should first read it carefully and see if there are any inconsistencies. It can be very strange things in the text. Second, in pre-editing, is the reuse of existing material. What has been translated before should be there in your database, that you can use it again, because this is repetitive and boring work. You can imagine that particular legal documents and contracts have to be translated over and over again with small changes. So why not reuse the existing material? Another important aspect that is more technical is we try to separate form from content. What do we mean by that? All the tags, all the codes in the format of the text, all the graphics are removed for the time being. So basically, the translator is left with nice pieces of text to be translated and shouldn't concentrate on all the layout details that surround the text. There are tools these days to, let's say, take away the layout, put it aside, and put it back on later on. So this exists, and it's very useful. Also, when you have to translate a website, translators are trained these days in translating websites, but you don't have to redesign a website. The tools that surround the website, the tag editor, make it possible to code all the tags that define layout, like titles and buttons and structure of your of each web page. And the software will kind of preserve all this, and the translator will only see the texts in between to be translated. He can translate this line by line, and afterwards the tag editor puts it back into place, and your result will be a very beautiful website in the correct layout, the way the original format used to be. You don't have to be a graphics expert, you don't have to be a web designer yourself. If we separate form from content, the translator can concentrate on the content, and we do that by, in fact, cutting the information into pieces. You might think that storing Word documents is a very good idea, but it is not. A Word document is too long to store as one piece. It's better to separate the document in pieces of information, kind of paragraphs, and they get coded so that later on you can retrieve these paragraphs from your knowledge database and reuse them piece by piece, paragraph by paragraph in new texts. So that is what we call information chunking. So in the process of pre-editing, the European Commission built a service for their translators called EURAMIS. That's the European Advanced Multilingual Information System. EURAMIS is a platform where an enormous amount of segments of text, you could see these as paragraphs, are stored. Of course, they're coded so that you can always retrieve information from the database. And it is growing day by day, new segments are added by the translator. Why are there so many segments? Of course, it's in 20 languages. So gradually information is added for all the languages. So here you see an image of a translator working at the European Commission at her desk. She has all the computing facilities, and she also wears a headset so she can talk and she can simply dictate her text to the computer. So it's also, there is a kind of speech processing and speech recognition tool built in so that she can talk. She doesn't have to type anymore. She can talk and her text will appear on the screen. So this is also an advantage. In some cases, you might get tired of just typing your texts all the time. This is the image, but what does it mean? What is she using actually? Well, she has on her desktop a huge number of tools combined in one platform. First of all, she will use the Translator's Workbench. Some of you may use it already. The Translator's Workbench is a product, it's a proper name. It's a software created by Trados, a German translator's software company. And the Translator's Workbench is in fact a database of sentences. I can't put it any simpler. It's a huge collection of sentences, nothing else. It links a sentence in a source text to the translated equivalent. So it's your collective memory. If you work with 100 people in a translation service, this would be your collective knowledge repository. You can see, I hope that you can see it, that basically the final part here, the lower part of the screen, is a word format. So every new text that has to be translated is simply imported as a Word document. Very easy, very user-friendly. So in the middle of the screen, you can see that you get the same buttons you get in a normal Microsoft Office environment. Nothing more, it's quite easy. And then a first part of the new text that has to be translated can be selected by the translator, and the computer starts to do a retrieval, a search in the database to see if there is a match, if this sentence has been translated before. So you can set, and that you can see in the left-hand column, you can set the match the way you want it. You can say, I want it 100% match. So that means you only accept the computer to find equivalents that are 100% the same. It's not that useful, because if there is one comma missing, or a full stop, or a very small technical detail missing, then the computer will leave the equivalent out, because it's not a 100% match. But you can shift towards a fuzzy match. And the easiest is to set the match somewhere between 70% and 80%. Because then you will get all the similar sentences. Sometimes only the date is different, or one name of a person is different, but the rest is correct. So, and that you can see at the top, in the first white opening, you can see the sentence in French, and then you can see the results found in the database, the comparison, and the Spanish equivalent. And then by one simple press on a button, the translator can say, yes, I accept this translation, or no, I don't accept it, and I will type my own solution. So the translator still decides. If the solution is not good, or if you don't like it, you don't have to accept it. But of course, you can confirm it and say, yes, this is a good translation, I'll adopt it, and perhaps I have to change one word. And then you can move on to the next segment. Okay? So that's the way it works. So, for example, here, here, this is in fact a mistake as an example, because I don't know whether you can see it, but the fuzzy match at the left-hand side is only met at 40%. Now, if you put in 40%, then the similarities will be there, but the differences may be too big. And then you get a lot of differences, and it might not be that easy to use it. Another asset to the translator's workbench, the way it is organized at the European Commission, but anyone can do it for that matter, is that on the left-hand side, you can open a multi-term database and you can look into the terminology. Imagine that a sentence hasn't been found in the database, or that you still want to search for equivalents or particular terms, then you can do that in that right-hand window at the top. You can open the multi-term database the Commission has made and look for a particular term. The terms will pop up automatically. So you have both solutions. You can have a look at the database of sentences. You can have a look at the terminology database. Even when there is no solution, when the sentence hasn't been translated yet, so nothing will pop up in the white screen at the top, then you can open the multi-term and the terms will come up. That's not the only thing. In the Word document, the translator can in fact use a number of options. A match can be 100%, so it can be automatically plugged in from the workbench. A match can be less than 100%, can be accepted by the translator and corrected. But particular parts can be completely new. The computer doesn't find any reference, it hasn't been translated before. Then there is the option to use machine translation. But it is an option. Nothing is obligatory, the translator doesn't have to do it. But as you can see in this document, the lower part with the black arrow should say Sistran. So this part was translated by machine translation, so purely automatically. So a translator can do that, can accept translations from the workbench. Don't forget, the translations from the workbench have been made by human translators, my colleagues who did that before. And then Sistran is an automatic system. You can accept it or you can leave it out and do it all by yourself. But again, the translator decides which tool to use at what particular occasion. For Sistran, I have to mention that not all language combinations do exist. That's the first point. So then again, you can see that the workbench has an interesting number of possibilities when you start comparing the actual collection of data in the memory. What you get at the top, here you get an English and a Spanish version, and you can decide which part to copy. That's not enough. The memory with all the sentences is only one part of the story. Machine translation is the second part of the story, but then there are all the different search tools. Most students these days, they know internet quite well, and we very often call them the Google generation, because for them it's Google or it's nothing. If it's not in Google, then it doesn't exist. This is of course not true. There are plenty of interesting databases where you can find information on the internet apart from Google. And the European Union decided to build, in fact, an enormous amount of databases and make them available for different services. And in the green, at the left-hand side, you can see all the names of the different databases available, such as EU law, information from the Council of Europe, that's the Council of Ministers. Euterpe is a database of the European Parliament. You have JAMCAT, which is also a huge database of European services and terminology. There is Termium, the database from the Canadian government. There is SDT Vista, which is the Service des Traducteurs. They also have their own information site. So Google is also part of this, but it's only one small item. So basically, the translator can click on any of these databases and can do a search. Of course, this is a privileged situation. This part is not possible for a freelance translator. You can't have access to all of these. Some are really limited to the European services. But still, if a translator is doing a particular translation on legal documents, they might open the Celex database, as you can see here. And what is indicated in the slide here is a document on air safety. This is the Celex database with all the legal documents. So this is all available for the translator. Of course, again, this is important to check sentences, to check existing paragraphs, and to check phraseology. How has it been said before by native speakers? Another search is you can look up items in Google, and then the moment you find the text in Google, you can click on this text and import it in the Euramis resulting database. So they can do a bit more than a normal freelance translator can do. And this then is the concordance result from Euramis. If you do a search on concordancing between two languages, for example, English and Spanish here, then the Euramis database can bring all the relevant information at the site of the translator in English and in Spanish and can look for concordances, so for the same items in both languages. Yeah? So if you're doing a text on genetic modification, as is the example here, the term genetic modification is there in English, and then matching items, matching paragraphs in Spanish can be found here. So this gives you, of course, a lot of information. And then you can see that in Spanish it says las modificaciones genéticas. So then you can see, oh, this is the right item, and you have the whole context available, how it has been produced in a sentence. Searches can be done in different ways. They have a note dossier manager, it is called. These are all search procedures, in fact, so that all the different remarks translators make about texts can also be found and that comments can be made. So in fact, there is quite a large amount of information available in databases. The translator's workbench, where you can simply retrieve sentences and their matching translation. There are search procedures. You can search in Google, but you can also search in different databases from other institutes in the European Union. And there are the note producing systems where translators can give comments to each other on particular issues and can discuss problems. So if we try to wrap up the system at the European Union, then we can see there is a large amount of pre-editing that can be done, preparing the text for translation, carefully checking the source text, preparing the text in the sense that we're going to analyze and compare with pre-existing information, and that we're going to store the information in a correct way. The actual translation is then done, revision will be done, but then there is the post-editing. How are we going to store the information in such a way that, again, it is useful for the next translation, for the next group of people who will have to deal with these documents? So post-editing, in fact, means capitalization of the work, making the results work, and maintenance of the database, because otherwise wrong information might be introduced or information might be lost. So this is important. So from the actual translation, information is sent to the archive of all the translations made. There's a huge digital archive called Vista. There is Euramis. I talked before about this. This is the database of all the aligned information, so the source and the translation. And all the relevant information is added into the large terminology database. Again, this is a huge investment, but it's important. Otherwise, the work is lost. If I simply do a translation and I hand the result to you, okay, that's fine, then we have a translation, but the material is not reusable at that point. It's gone. It's there for you, but it can't be reused. So this here, it looks quite simple, the post-editing, but it is very important that it is done in a proper way, and that only the terminology that has been checked and revised will be entered into the database. Otherwise, you start creating mistakes over mistakes. What are the results? The people at the European institutes try to evaluate this themselves, and there are a number of positive elements, but also some negative elements. Positive is that productivity is greatly enhanced. Anyhow, the billions and billions of pages can't be translated. Impossible. But they try to do their best, and for the very urgent files, it is needed to speed up a little bit, and this can be done, definitely. The result is better, it goes faster. Another positive point is the coherence. Very often, basically most of the time, 10 to 20 to 40 translators are working on the same file. It's not like I'm doing one nice text and this is my work and this is going to be in the archive. These are huge files. Think about food safety, about avian flu, for example, very complex piles and piles of texts, 1,000 pages. So it is distributed in a team of translators. The question is, who is going to supervise their work, and who is going to make sure that they all translate using the same terminology and that they're going to translate into a coherent style? Coherence is improved by using the database with the sentences, by using the same terminology database. And again, harmonization of terminology is also part of it. You try to, in fact, coin a terminology for the EU, for the different subdomains, and this will be used over and over again. That's the positive side. Negative is that not all the software tools are that compatible. So very often, the computing department has to do a lot of hands-on programming to bring everything together. So Euramis is not an obvious solution. It looks nice when a translator opens the screen and on the desktop you see all these tools combined, but it is not that obvious. So a lot of computing work has to be done. Another negative aspect is that translators feel that the language is a bit over-standardized. In other words, creativity is left out more and more because you try to have the same terminology, the same style in your sentences, so you can't put too much creativity in your text. That's a disadvantage. But again, it is not a translation of a beautiful poem or a novel. You're not working for the Nobel Prize of Literature. This is technical texts. So it is, of course, not the most creative of all aspects. And another disadvantage is the cost. The system is very costly. It costs an enormous amount of money to install the whole toolbox, let's say. This is the result, and the translator seems to be working in isolation, quietly at the desk, can talk to the computer, can type in texts, can use all these tools, but they come from that situation on the left with the old-fashioned typewriter, not that long ago. And nowadays, it is this extremely complex central computing system that has to take care of delivering all the data. So you get a central computing system with a huge server. You get all the different components with an enormous amount of gigabyte of memory. And this has to be distributed to each translator individually. So there is a growing complexity of the situation, basically for the computing department, not necessarily for the translator. The translator only sees the result on the screen. That's the story for the European institutions. And I have to add one thing. If we go back to that particular slide, they do have this huge open server with a huge memory and a huge server, but at the same time, they are trying to build a better platform. Yesterday, I think I mentioned that Eurodicotom used to be the terminology database created by the European Commission. So it's still available on the internet, but it's not updated anymore because they are trying and changing into a new system. The new system, IATE, combines three huge databases of terminology. And we're now eagerly waiting. We hope that this IATE database will be open for the public soon. First, they tried to stop it from being open to the public. They said, no, we're not going to put it back for public. But we protested. We even signed a petition saying, but it is taxpayers' money you're using, so it should be open to the public. And now we hope that once all the bugs have been removed and once the system is working well, it will be open again over the internet for everyone. In the meantime, you can use Eurodicotom. It's still there, although it's no longer updated. It's still a very good database. So this was the story for the European institutions. And as you are aware of, these translators are sort of privileged in the sense that all the computing work has been done for them, and they just have to sit there and use it. Sometimes they get irritated if it doesn't work, but at least they are part of a very large system and they have plenty of resources available. But now we can translate this situation to the individual freelancer, if you have your own translation office, working alone or working in a small group, working in a small private company, whatever. You can also use a number of tools. It's not that far-fetched or not that difficult. And here I've used the abbreviations human-aided machine translation and machine-aided human translation. And basically, the translator has a choice between the whole range. If we're talking about machine-aided human translation, what we mean is it's a human being that actually does a translation, but the machine will help. To what extent? That's your decision. A minimum of help is using a computer with a word processor. That's already a big step forward from the old-fashioned typewriter, of course, or translating with a pencil. But you decide how much the machine is going to help you. But actually, the human translator does the job. Human-aided machine translation is the other way around. It's machine translation. The machine will produce a translation, and the human being, the human translator, will correct the machine, will pre-edit and will post-edit and revise, but won't do the actual translation. And between that universe, everything is possible. So I've listed them here in an overview. On the left-hand side, you can see all the tools a human translator can use. The word processor to start with. Then spelling and grammar checkers. You can decide whether you want your spelling checker to be on, whether you want a grammar checker to be on. It's not always pleasant to have a grammar checker on because then the computer can say, this sentence is not all right, it's too long or whatever. And you say, no, I don't agree, and so on. But you're not obliged to activate your grammar checker. Then any human translator can use the necessary e-resources, the internet and e-dictionaries, electronic dictionaries. You can, for example, buy an electronic dictionary on a CD-ROM, install it on your computer. You can add a database to that, and you can use the internet, and not only Google, but plenty of instruments to inform yourself about texts, about phraseology, about contextual information, and whatever. In the middle column, I've listed the computer-assisted translation tools. So CAT is computer-assisted translation. Here, the computer gives more linguistic analysis, helps you a bit more on the linguistic side. For example, you can use corpus analysis tools. Then you analyze the data in a text corpus. I'll come back to that in a minute. You have a terminology management tool, such as Multiterm, to help you create your own database. You have the translation memory. I've shown you the translator's workbench. You can also buy that in a standalone version, just for your own computer. It's perfectly well possible. And you can buy software that helps you to do localization projects and to translate websites. For example, Passolo is an excellent tool to help you, one of the excellent tools to help you to translate a website. You can also buy a standalone version just for yourself as a freelance translator. And then the other extreme end, we have machine translation tools, where indeed the machine will do the translation, but there we have to be careful that we have the right version and the right language combination, of course. You always buy a tool in machine translation for one particular language pair. So either it's French-English or it's English-French, two different software packages. And for many languages, nothing is available at the moment. So it is restricted to a number of language pairs. Another word about these computer-assisted tools for translation. We've mentioned the spelling checkers and the grammar checkers. They come automatically. Electronic dictionaries, you know, you can buy these simply from the bookshop. Very often, even when you buy a paperback version of a dictionary, there is a CD-ROM included. You can install it on your computer. For the terminology management systems, Trados with Multiterm is perhaps the most well-known, but there are others, such as Termstar, a very pleasant system to use, created by a Swiss company, Swiss-German Star, very pleasant as well to use, again, a linguistic database where you can build your own terminology system. Then another interesting application is the corpus analysis, where, in fact, when you have a digital corpus, so a number of texts on a particular topic, you can do a text analysis. You can have the computer go through your text and count the number of words, identify terminology, identify terms in context, and help you with collecting an interesting database. System Quirk is one of the tools. It's free on the internet. So if you type in Google System Quirk, Quirk is the name of a very famous grammatician. System Quirk is developed by the University of Surrey in Guildford, in the south of UK. And this system is free over the internet. We use it quite often at the Institute for concordancing, for counting words in a text and so on. Wordsmith is a tool that has been created by the Cambridge University Press, and you can also buy it through their website. You can't buy it in a shop, you can only buy it over the internet. It's very cheap, and it's interesting, again, with Wordsmith, you can do text analysis. ExtraTerm is the system produced by Trados, and it's a bit more expensive, but again, it can analyze texts, monolingual texts, or even multilingual texts. Then for the translation memories, we have the Workbench by Trados, but we also have Transit, produced by Star. So it is not the case that Trados has a monopoly position. There are alternatives to the system. And then finally, in machine translation, there are a couple of companies. I can show you some on the internet later, but Systron is the most well-known and delivers the machine translation for the European Commission. They have, I think, at the moment, the most advanced set of language pairs available. Now, to come back to the terminology management system. In my first lecture, I talked about creating a terminology database. And you can do this yourself, creating a database with a particular record structure, entry, grammatical information, definition, context, and so on, and adding translations to that. But we shouldn't see terminology as an isolated tool. It is better to see it as a central knowledge database. It can be used by other people, as I explained in the beginning of my presentation. And it is excellent if you can use a terminology database combined with a translation memory, where you also store the sentences, and with other tools to help people to produce the correct texts. So this is a screenshot of a terminology database that is quite simple. At the top, you have the English item. The term is abdomen. You have a definition. The green items are key terms as well. If you click on the green, another record will open. And then you have all the translations added. So this is a very easy way of using a database. And you can switch from source to target language. You can bring the Dutch up or the French up, whatever. You can switch from source to target. A small word of explanation on term extraction. I already mentioned the fact that you can analyze a text through the computer and ask the computer to find term candidates, to see which terminology is available in a text. It won't be perfect, the result won't be perfect, but it will help you to see how many terms pop up in a text. Very often I ask my students to do that before starting the translation. First, term extraction, see what comes up, what the computer brings in the open of possible term candidates, and try and find translations for these before starting the actual translation work. With the Trados tool, you can do it in a monolingual way or in a multilingual way. What do we mean by that? If you simply have a text in one language, it's analyzed by the computer, you get all the term candidates and the contexts. So that's fine. But if you do it in a multilingual way, that means you have a text in two languages, almost equal, or not a perfect translation, but similar. Well, then both texts will be analyzed and the computer will try to find a list of term candidates in both languages, and then you can find a match. So it can be very useful. This is the result of such a term extraction. So where at the bottom you get contexts, and at the top you get the different terms that have been selected. But again, you will always have to correct it manually. You will have to go through the list and throw out items that you say, no, that's not a term, here the computer made a mistake, that's not a correct term. Then the translation memory I already explained in the case of the European Institutes. So you can see it as a collection of texts where sentences are stored, source and target are linked. Now, you might wonder, how can I do this myself? It doesn't need any programming. Imagine you're working as a freelance translator. You can simply load some texts into your computer, but of course you have to start somewhere. Translator's Workbench, when you buy it, is empty. It's up to you to fill it with data. So imagine you have a digital text, source text and translation. You can load it into the computer, and then the computer will try to align it. Alignment means link source with target sentence. And once this is done, and once you confirm it, it will be stored into the database, and then you can start to work. The more you translate, the more you store into the workbench, the richer the memory gets, and of course, the more chance there is to find a good translation for an upcoming text. Again, it must be clear, we're talking here about technical texts, administrative texts, contracts, legal documents, highly repetitive material. It's not suitable for literary translation, of course. That's obvious. There are different tools available. Again, you have the Workbench by Trados, Transit by Star. Deja Vu is a free system, comes from Spain. And SDLX is a system created by SDL, a company in Ireland. And again, that's not free, but you can go to their website, SDL, and you can see how you can buy it. This is a screenshot of the alignment tool. So when you buy a Translator's Workbench, you also have to buy WinAlign, the alignment tool that comes with it. What you can see here is, on the left-hand side, is the source text in French. On the right-hand side is the source text, or the target, sorry, the translation in Dutch. And the computer tries to find the matches. So the first word is composition, translation, salmon stelling. Yeah? And there the computer has drawn a line, so it says source is composition, translation is sound telling. Second, suppositoire is translated by Zepspillen for babies. Okay, the computer finds a match. Then the next sentence, and there we have a problem because bébé is on the third line in French. So now the computer has to know that this has to be linked to the second line in Dutch, because there it's one little sentence. So that we will have to correct. Then it says 100 milligrams de paracetamol, so it has to be linked to the same, to the translation in Dutch. The computer will do a first analysis and try to make the matches between source and target, but sometimes it will make a mistake and you have to correct it by hand. Once that is done, you can say confirm and it will be stored in the database. And then if you have another leaflet on medication to be translated in the same area, translations will be found and can be used. Once the alignment is finished and all the material is in the database, we can start translating a new text. The new text is here in the Word file at the bottom, and at the top I can find the translations in the database. So here we have a perfect match, and that we can use in the actual translation just by pressing one button. Okay? And you can see at the right-hand side, at the top corner, that's the multi-term database that's opened, and there you find dose being translated by doses. So even if you have some doubts, you can find the terminology over there. Then a word on machine translation. Even a freelance translator can buy a small PC tool to install on your own personal computer for machine translation. These tools are available in a normal software shop. But first of all, a first remark is, it is a very complex linguistic system. I already said language is the most difficult algorithm for a computer. And it is composed of three parts. First, the source language has to be analyzed in the computer. That means for those who have studied general linguistics, you have the computer will draw a tree diagram of the sentence, will try to exclude all ambiguities, and will have to come up with different morphemes and the different lexical items. This is very complex because a computer doesn't have any knowledge of the world and can't interpret. Whereas if you're talking to me about, let's say, a knight, and a knight is in the historical context of the Knights of Malta, then I only need one word to know what you're talking about in the context. But if we're talking about chess, we also have a knight, but it's something completely different. It's part of the chess pieces. Well, I know as a human being in what context we are talking, so I don't need the interpretation that comes with it. A computer does need the characteristics that come with the text, otherwise it's impossible. So it's very, very complex to build a machine grammar, a machine dictionary for a particular language, to do the analysis. Then there is a transfer to the other language from the naked morphemes with all the characteristics that go with it. And then there is the third part, and that is the synthesis, that is building again the correct sentences in the target language. Again, using the target grammar, of course. Again, imagine you're doing a translation from French into German. The German sentence in word order, in structure, will be completely different from the French one. So again, the grammar has to be able to retrieve that information. Globally speaking, there are three types of systems. The first group is free on the internet. I've listed them here. These are the online systems, Free Translation, Systran, Reverso, and the iTranslator. They're very pleasant. You can use them, you can try them if you want to. But these are only teasers, of course. You can't customize them, you can't use your own dictionaries, you can't use your own database. You can only use them as a kind of toy on the internet. If you type in a normal sentence, it might work, but very often it gives complete nonsense. So you will see how it goes. Then you have the PC-based systems. These are the systems that you can buy in a normal software store, and you can install them on your own personal computer. They're cheap. It's the price of a normal small software package. But again, the most important limitation here is the language combination. I'm afraid at the moment there is nothing available for Maltese, but also for Dutch, almost nothing is available. Only very small systems are available. But for the larger languages, you might be lucky. English and French is an important combination. Also English, Chinese, and other related tools. And then finally, there are the so-called mainframe systems. These are systems that can only be installed on very huge computers for large translation divisions. It's always made to measure, and Systron is the most important here. Perhaps I can, let's see if I can go on the internet and show you the site, systronsoft.com. Yeah, here it is. So here you can see that Systron calls itself a language translation technology. It has solutions for individual users, so as an individual translator, small and medium businesses, and even large businesses or governments. Here you have a free translation trial. So here you can type your text. You can even paste the title of a website, and it will be translated. I can click here. I hope you can read it from that far. And now you can see the list of languages available. These are the language pairs. It's not that bad for Systron, but as you can see, it's almost always related to English. It's Arabic to English, simplified Chinese to English, traditional Chinese to English, Dutch to English, Dutch to French. And then you have English as a source to Dutch, French, German, Italian, Japanese, Korean, Portuguese, and so on. French as a source language, German as a source language, Italian as a source, and some of the Asian languages, Russian and Portuguese. So these are the possibilities, okay? But you can always try it out for yourself over the internet. And then you can see which are the products available. And for Systron, this has been very well explained. You have the Systron Personal System as a standalone version. You can buy that on for your own PC. But interesting enough, you can also ask for web translation. And in that case, you don't install anything on your own PC. In fact, your translation is sent over the internet to the Systron computer. It's translated and sent back. It only takes a couple of minutes, and you pay. You pay for the services you've had, of course. And then there are other possibilities, like the professional standard version, the premium, and so on, so you can see which version is suitable in your own particular case, always taking into account the language combination you need. Of course, when you use machine translation, it involves new skills for translators. So, in fact, our students are now also trained to do pre and post editing. So when the machine does a translation, your job will be to revise the text afterwards, and that's a completely new skill. Okay. So that's it. In fact, I talked about the Dutch Language Union yesterday. The important thing I want to stress here is that smaller languages will have to take up responsibility of developing their own tools. Again, commercial companies are not interested in smaller volumes. So here, we decided to subsidize the development of such a tool so that Dutch, at least, would be there in the market. So then, it's time for my conclusion. I think I've tried to make clear that it's a fast-changing world for translators, and that multilingual communication is getting more and more important. So that, in fact, building a dedicated platform for translators where you can use all the tools you want is a very, very interesting prospect for the future. So that's it, in fact. Thank you.
أول شيء مستوسيت عندهم تاتنا هفتا ماتريال رجت دكتور ستس و زقور اللي هاي متدى لا تشال دان الشول كله وفير العياد يجري
Yes.
If you find a problem in the source system when you are translating, what do you do with the source system?
With the source text.
With the source text.
Yeah, it depends. Either you know the author. In some companies, this is quite feasible, that you know the engineer or the expert who wrote the source text, and then you can go and talk to the author and point the difficulty out, and maybe it's just a grammatical mistake, or it's something that is an inconsistency in the text. Sometimes it can be more than just a small mistake. If not, then if it's a very obvious mistake, you might try and interpret it yourself. But you should try and find a backup then, of course.
Actually, sometimes I think it's very annoying to have an ambiguous term in the source text, and which cannot be rendered by a similarly ambiguous text in the target language, because that would be easier, definitely. So it's a case where you have definitely to interpret the ambiguity. Mm-hmm. I don't know what freedom the translator should take with such a text. Obviously, one could consult the client and ask him, but in some cases, the client is not readily available.
Well, if possible, it helps if you have text to be compared with, other types of text dealing with the same subdomain. But at least you should know which subdomain you're working in and which concepts are used in that particular subdomain, and that might help to find the correct interpretation. But it is not always easy, and sometimes, indeed, mistakes remain in the text, or the translator got it wrong and made the wrong translation. It happens quite often. It doesn't mean that the system gets flawless. That's not possible. Manuel,
okay.
I think there is one more question.
On page 8, we have over-standardization of the language.
Yeah.
Is over-standardization successful?
Well, over-standardization is perceived as a negative aspect. Translators experience this as being too rigid. The way they are allowed to translate. So basically, what all these systems try to do is to exclude ambiguities, to exclude mistakes, and almost to force particular types of translations upon the translator. So sometimes the translator experiences this as being cut away from creativity. So it is experienced as a negative element for the translator. Again, in a legal document, you don't have much freedom for creativity, I'm afraid.
That's also limited scholarship.
Yes. The scholarship a technical translator needs is something completely different from the scholarship a literary translator needs. It's not a kind of expertise. So web translation using all these tools is also a kind of scholarship, but of a different kind. And again, if you translate legal documents, you might be an expert in law. So you have a scholarship on that type of content, of course.
Mela, wasalna biex nirringrazzjaw għal aħħar darba lill-Professor Sasters, nittamaw li dawn il-laqat li għamletilna. Sualna ħafna żgur li jiena nista' ngħid li għalkemm ħdimt fuq traduzzjoni u kelli idea dwar din is-sitwazzjoni. Żgur li firxitilna dinja biex ngħidlek ġdida u veru ta' esperjenzi u ta' għodot li ħafna minnha jkun diffiċli, għadu diffiċli għalina biex inkunu daqshekk familjari magħhom. Anke wieħed laqtu żgur iċ-ċarezza u l-metodiċi ta' li bija waslitinna dawn il-taħdidiet li fil-bazi tagħhom lanqasu maħfif ħafna. Nirringrazzjaw ħafna u nirringrazzjakom tal-attendenza.
You have just listened to the third in a series of lectures by Professor Freda Steuer, expert in terminology and technical translation. The lecture was organized by the Department of Maltese at the University of Malta and is entitled Creation and Management of a Virtual Terminology Information Center.